Hi, welcome back to the channel. This video is a roundup of some of the latest news and events from the world of business and finance. I've picked out a few stories that I think are interesting, informative, and maybe a little bit of fun at the end of this video. In today's video, I'll give you a latest update from Turkey, where there's been some very concerning news about gas supplies, which is having a major knock-on impact to electricity production and industry. This is the first sign that we've seen of Turkey starting to suffer from all of the problems that it encountered at the end of 2021 with its currency. And we're now starting to see major problems popping up. So I'll go through that in a bit more detail. I'll give you an update on Country Garden, which is the largest Chinese property developer by sales, bigger than Evergrande in terms of revenues. And there's been some news about a bond, which I'll update you on. I'll talk to you about Evergrande itself, who have now appointed some advisors to represent it in discussions with the international bondholders. So we may be seeing the first signs of Evergrande starting to come to the table for a restructuring discussion. I'll talk about Lithuania, which is an Eastern European country of less than 3 million people, so pretty small, but is having a major political fallout with China, which is now starting to impact some German car makers and other major global international businesses. So we'll talk about what's going on between Lithuania and China. I'll give you an update from Netflix, who recently introduced some price hikes in the US and Canada, and have now announced their latest forecasts for new customers for Q1 2022. And finally today, we'll talk about the latest product from a Hollywood superstar that is causing some controversy. So before we get started, I'd like to ask you if you could give me a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content, and also to subscribe if you haven't done so already. And I'd just like to point out that I always include chapters in my videos, so there will be a separate section for all of the topics that I've just run you through. So if there's one that you're not particularly interested in, it's really easy to skip through it and move on to the next section. So if you've been following the channel, you'll know that there's been a lot of problems in Turkey over the last few months. And in December alone, the country spent over $10.5 billion of currency supporting the lira and also buying gas in the international markets. And the reason it needed to spend so much on gas is that a lot of the electricity in Turkey is generated using natural gas, and also a lot of the households are supplied with gas directly for heating and cooking, and a lot of industry also uses natural gas in its manufacturing and production processes. And one of the problems Turkey has is that it has to import all of that gas. So as the value of the Turkish lira fell through October, November and December, it was costing more and more to keep buying in that gas. And in December alone, it spent $3.4 billion on gas purchases. Now, as I've reported, the foreign currency reserves are now at an all-time low in Turkey, and they're at the point where they can't afford to keep buying things in. And the authorities have announced that there is now a shortage of gas, reportedly caused by technical problems with the pipeline from Iran. And the result of these problems is that the authorities have announced that the power stations will be provided with 40% less gas, and industry will be provided with 60% less gas for at least the next 10 days. So the implications of that for the country are quite severe. We are going to see blackouts in Turkey. Electricity is going to be cut off for large parts of the country. So that's bad news for the people of Turkey, but it's more disastrous for industry, because we're going to see electricity outages in factories, which means that they won't be able to produce things. And we're also going to see direct implications of the reduction of the gas supply. Gas is used in industrial processes and factories all across Turkey. And if that supply is now being restricted, then that means that industry is going to be restricted. And Turkey relies heavily on its exports. So this news will have a direct impact on Turkish industry and Turkish exports. So this is likely to become a vicious circle that as industry suffers, then revenue will suffer, and it will have less foreign currency to be able to buy ongoing gas supplies. And so we could see this becoming a bigger and bigger issue over the next few weeks and months. If you're interested in looking at this in a bit more detail, I recently posted a full video on this topic, so please check out the channel for that information. China's largest property developer, Country Garden, has just announced that it has completed the placing of a $500 million convertible bond, which is one of the first successful new issuances of bonds that we've seen from any of the Chinese property developers. Now, the bond itself was actually issued in local currency and was sold to local investors. So the $500 million figure I've just quoted is the US dollar equivalent of the bond. Now, this is a really interesting development because if you follow the channel, you'll know that Country Garden recently had to pull out of a $300 million bond. And the reason it pulled that bond was there was lack of appetite and some concerns over the creditworthiness of both Country Garden and the general property sector as a whole. Now, following the withdrawal of that bond, Country Garden came out last week and bought back $10 million of its own bonds, which I reported on at the time as being a very strange thing to do. And I did raise the question as to whether or not they'd done that solely as a PR exercise to be able to show the market how well they were doing and the fact that they had spare cash to be able to go in and buy back some bonds. Because it was a really, really weird thing for them to do, especially as one of the bonds wasn't due until July 2026. So it seemed like a crazy, pointless exercise at the time. But obviously, that exercise worked, and they've now managed to persuade Chinese investors to increase the amount of their bond to 500 million. So overall, this is a really good outcome for Country Garden. But I think this shows the discussions that are going on within China at the moment. As you'll know, if you follow the channel, Evergrande is now being run by the Chinese authorities. It's essentially been nationalized through the implementation of the Risk Management Committee. And the authorities are instructing the banks to keep supporting the sector. So I think what we're seeing here is direct intervention by the authorities who are telling lenders and investors to buy these bonds. And it's interesting that the bond is a convertible. So this isn't a straightforward bond, which is essentially just a loan. What we've got here is an instrument that can be converted into Country Garden shares at some point in the future. So the terms of the bond are that it has a 4.95% coupon, which is pretty low. When you consider what's going on in China right now and what's happening with the whole sector, a coupon of less than 5% indicates that this is investment grade risk. Now, I would say that this isn't investment grade risk. This is nowhere near investment grade risk. This is high yield risk and possibly straight to default risk. So it's not a risk that I would be taking, but I think the Chinese investors and lenders are taking a different view because of the influence of the authorities right now. And the conversion price of this bond is $8.10. So that means that if you're a lender and you wanted to exchange this bond for equity, you would do so at a price of $8.10. Now, that's a really interesting price because the current share price for Country Garden is around about $6.75. So the price has been set significantly higher than the current market price. So in order to find this convertible bond attractive, you have to believe that the share price for Country Garden is going to increase by more than 20%. Now, when you look at what's going on, that looks pretty unlikely. I don't think we're going to see a huge increase in the share price of Chinese property developers anytime in the near future. More likely, we will see a massive fall in the share price of Chinese property developers. If you saw my recent posting, we went through all of the bonds that are due for maturity in 2022, and we've got over $160 billion of bonds that need to be repaid during the course of this year. Now, there is no way that the developers have that cash to be able to repay those bonds. So what all of the developers need is the bond market to be happy to issue new bonds to replace the old bonds. So my read on this whole situation is that the Chinese authorities have instructed investors to buy this bond with a view to buying more bonds over the course of 2022 to try to refinance some of that $160 billion of bonds that are due for maturity. And Country Garden has announced that the $500 million that it's raised through this bond will be used to refinance some of its bonds that are coming up for maturity. And I think we may see more of these convertible bonds being issued during the course of 2022. But I think these will only be taken up by Chinese investors and lenders. There is no way overseas institutions should be buying any of this sort of debt. So for the first time, we have seen some positive moves from Evergrande with regards to the international bond situation. Don't get too excited yet. We haven't seen any press releases from Evergrande. They haven't made any statements about what's going to happen with the international bonds. But what they have done is appointed some advisors to represent the company in future discussions. So this is the first move towards a negotiation, to actually meeting with some of the bondholders and Moelis and Kirkland & Ellis and Harneys, who've now been appointed to represent the bondholders. And Evergrande have now appointed three different parties. They've appointed BOCI Asia and China International Capital Corp as financial advisors. So these guys will be in charge of putting together a restructuring proposal for the $19 billion of international bonds that are out there in the market right now. And they've also appointed Zonglun Law Firm to act as their legal advisors in those matters. So this is a really positive step. And another positive step towards the restructuring is that Evergrande have now written to all of the bondholders and asked them to confirm their existing holdings. And the reason that Evergrande has done that is because these bonds trade in the secondary market. I covered off in previous videos that a German activist had bought some of the bonds and was trying to force a default situation. So Evergrande doesn't know who's actually holding these bonds right now. And they need to know who's on the list so that they're aware of who's going to come and negotiate round the table. So what we see in a lot of American and European deals is that when a company gets into distress, the primary bondholders will often sell out of their position and you will get hedge funds and distressed debt funds picking up that debt on the cheap and then hoping to come in and negotiate a profit as an outcome. So Evergrande will want to avoid having a lot of hard-nosed hedge funds and distressed debt fund managers around the table, and they would prefer to have all of the people who took that debt in the primary market. But either way, this is the first positive sign that we've seen from Evergrande that there will be some form of negotiations and discussions. And obviously, I will keep you posted as soon as there's any further developments on that front. Lithuania is a relatively small Eastern European that most people who watch this channel probably don't know anything about. But Lithuania have been ruffling a lot of feathers in Beijing in China over the last 6 months or so due to their political relations with Taiwan. Now, Taiwan is an island off mainland China, and there's been a long-running dispute between the people of Taiwan and China as to whether or not it is an independent country. And China refuses to acknowledge Taiwan as a separate entity. Now, this is quite a delicate political issue. And to appease the Chinese position and not to cause any problems, when an embassy is opened in foreign countries for Taiwan, it's officially referred to as Taipei. And Taipei is the capital of Taiwan. And China appear happy to live with that as a compromise, as it doesn't actually stipulate that Taiwan is a country with its own embassy. However, the people of Taiwan see themselves as independent and don't see themselves as part of mainland China. And Lithuania decided during 2021 that it wanted to strengthen its economic relationship with Taiwan, and therefore it allowed Taiwan to open an official embassy in Lithuania. Now, this action infuriated all of the officials in Beijing, and they immediately imposed economic sanctions and a boycott on everything relating to Lithuania. So since the embassy was opened in July 21, Lithuania has been banned by everything relating to China. And that's now starting to cause problems for Lithuanian business. So Lithuania has a lot of overseas multinationals who've set up manufacturing facilities in the country because it's cheap labour, and Lithuania was wanting to encourage business to come in and open up facilities. And a number of German car manufacturers have facilities in Lithuania. And they're now starting to have problems, firstly, because they can't source product that they use in their manufacturing from China. Firstly, because they can't source products and components from China in their manufacturing facility. So that's causing a problem with their supply chain. But also the problem is that these manufacturers are not able to stipulate where some of the parts came from. So if something was sourced in Lithuania, they can no longer state that if they want to sell any product into China. So these multinational companies are now applying pressure on Lithuania to close the Taiwan embassy. But the Lithuanian authorities don't want to do that. They're quite happy with the Taiwan embassy. They're quite happy making a political statement, and they don't care about China. So we're getting to a point now where it's starting to impact on the economy. It's starting to have some influence on jobs and the future viability of some of these manufacturing plants. So it's going to be a really interesting situation to see how this unfolds. So obviously, I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments. And if you're interested in me posting a more detailed video on this, please put something in the comments, because I'm always interested to know what people want to see in terms of future content. As you may have seen in a recent video, Netflix recently hiked their prices in the USA and Canada. And the theory is that Netflix is now so established and the market leader that everybody will pay whatever price they ask, because everybody wants to see the Netflix content. But that theory will really be put to the test over the next few months, because we've just seen the latest forecasts come out from Netflix, and their growth forecast is significantly lower than what the market was expecting. So Netflix have said that from January through to March, they are expecting to add 2.5 million new customers. And that compares to the market estimate of 5.9 million. So they're coming in less than 50% of what everybody was expecting. And the reason that Netflix has offered as an explanation is that they've had some delay to new content. So they've specifically named the second series of Bridgerton and the new time travel movie starring Ryan Reynolds called The Adam Project. Now, they sound like pretty lame excuses to me. I don't think there were 3 million people who are going to sign up to Netflix based on the second series of Bridgerton and a new Ryan Reynolds movie. That's not happening. So what we're seeing here is a slowdown in Netflix customer acquisition program. And this may be because life's starting to return to normal. We've come away from pandemics and lockdowns and people sitting at home watching TV constantly. So this might be a reflection of that. Or it could be a reaction to the increase in prices, because there comes a tipping point when people say, no more, I don't need to keep paying $15, $16, $17 a month to Netflix to watch this content, because there are a lot of other options. We've got HBO, we've got Disney, we've got Apple, we've got Amazon Prime. There is a long list of content providers who are offering services for significantly less than Netflix. Netflix is obviously the market leader. It does have a lot of content on there, but there's a lot more competition coming through every single month. So it'll be interesting to see how things develop for Netflix over the next 6 months or so. Their share price is down over 25% since the high of November. So the market is obviously concerned that Netflix might start losing its dominant position and that the price increases that they brought through recently won't be well received by customers. And finally today, I wanted to talk about marketing. Now, marketing is obviously a really important part of anybody's business, and particularly so if you're high profile, if you've got a brand or a name that everybody is familiar with. And Gwyneth Paltrow falls into that bracket. So Gwyneth Paltrow has been a massive star in Hollywood for a long period of time. She stars in the Marvel movies, she's Tony Stark's right-hand woman, but she's been in lots of blockbuster movies. But that wasn't enough for Gwyneth Paltrow. She wanted to create her own brand and market her own business. And in 2008, she made her first steps in doing that when she created a newsletter and started talking about diet and health and lifestyle. And a turning point in her business came when she had a chat with Peter Arnold, who's a marketing executive, and he joked to her that all internet companies had to have 00 in their name. So she took her initials, GP, squeezed a couple of O's in the middle and created her brand Goop. And Goop has been expanding and growing over the last 10 years or so. It started life focusing on diet and health and recipes and cookbooks, but has since expanded into fashion and skincare and beauty and lifestyle products. And it's those lifestyle products that I wanted to focus in on today, and particularly candles. So if you want to sell a candle for a huge amount of money, What's the best strategy? How do you convince people to pay $75 for a candle? That is an extortionate amount of money. When you look into what it costs to make a candle, it's relatively cheap. So this is a high margin product. And a lot of firms are selling candles for $20, $30, $40, which is still pretty expensive. But if you want to sell a candle for $75, you need to put something unique into that candle. You need to come up with some form of marketing that makes this extra special and that people want to talk about it and buy it. And Gwyneth Paltrow has managed to do that by coming up with outrageous names for her outrageously expensive candles. And she's just launched her very latest version. Now, you may have heard of this before. You may be familiar with Gwyneth's candle concepts, but I wanted to talk you through the five most outrageous candle names and most outrageously priced candles that Goop sell. So at number five, we've got a candle that doesn't really have that much of an outrageous name. It's called Slightly Bitter. And the concept around this branding is that it relates to relationships. And as you'll know, famously, Gwyneth Paltrow went through a decoupling exercise with Chris Martin, the musician from Coldplay. And Slightly Bitter, I think, relates to this whole relationship thing. But $85 for this candle does look quite expensive. Number four on the list is This Smells Like My Prenup, which doesn't make any sense at all because a prenup doesn't have any smell. But the branding and the marketing around this is genius because Gwyneth Paltrow has managed to link a candle to a prenup as if this is something to do with getting married and having a prenup and all the things relating to that. And again, the price of this has come in at $75. Number three on the list is This Smells Like My Orgasm. Now, I don't know what this candle smells like. I haven't got one. I've never smelt it. But even if I had one, I'm not entirely sure what I would expect this to smell like. And also, I don't know whether this relates to my orgasm or Gwyneth Paltrow's orgasm. It's not quite clear. It doesn't say in the small print. But either way, it's a genius piece of marketing and it's retailing for $75. Number two on the list is the brand new product that's just been launched, which is called Hands Off My Vagina. Now, I'm not sure what Hands Off My Vagina is meant to smell like. It isn't really a smell, is it? It's just a statement. And to be fair to Gwyneth Paltrow, there is some form of link to charity here. This candle has been directly related to a lot of news about abortion that's been in the press. So again, another brilliant piece of marketing by Gwyneth Paltrow and her firm Goop, because they've got this candle into the press and on the front pages of a lot of publications. And it's retailing for $75. And number one on the list is the single most famous candle in the world, This Smells Like My Vagina. Again, I don't own one of these candles. I don't know what it smells like. And again, I don't know whether it's meant to smell like my vagina or Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina. It's not stipulated. But as it's retailing at $75, I won't be finding out anytime soon. This is not something that I've got on my birthday or Christmas present list for this year. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's video. You found the articles and discussion interesting and informative and maybe a little bit of fun at the end. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.